The reading this morning shall come from Matthew, the fifth chapter. It's Matthew, the fifth chapter. And I shall start reading with the seventh verse. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God.
Thank you, Brother Tommy, for that reading. No doubt familiar to every Bible student here from the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, the blessings upon people, and the conditions that people would live in to realize those blessings and how wonderful they truly are. Taking a closer look this morning at particularly verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. And doing a little analysis of that and thinking about that, how we might implement that in a practical way will help us spiritually in this life. May God bless you today for being in our worship assembly, for praising and worshiping God, and for praying to Him, for thinking about His Word. We're so very delighted to see each and every one here. Very early in the ministry of Jesus, Matthew records what He taught in the famous Sermon on the Mount. And in that sermon, from the very beginning, Jesus made it clear that His kingdom would not be established and promoted by militarism, by armies, and by fighting wars. Blessed citizens of the kingdom, the sons of God, as He refers to them in this passage, would be peacemakers. A term that sometimes we read through quickly and overlook. But how beneficial it would be to think about what that really says. To be peacemakers. The sons of God will make peace. Peacemakers shall be called sons of God, a designation that's filled with honor and prestige and dignity, showing that they have really, by their actions, entered into the realm where God is. And where God functions and where God does what He does in His holy activity, making peace. These sons of God do more than just think about peace. They do more than just talk about peace. They do more than just wish for peace. They do more than just love peace. They do more than just hope for peace. Jesus invited His disciples to bring about peace where it does not exist. And that's quite a challenge, isn't it? This beatitude does not make a promise to those who simply avoid conflict. Instead, true happiness comes to those who face their differences and overcome them. They are peacemakers. What this beatitude demands is not the passive acceptance of conditions and things and relationships with people just because we're afraid of the trouble of doing anything about them. Trouble always comes when we try to do something and make things better. It's the active facing of things and the active making of peace. Even when the way to peace is a tough struggle, and so many times it is, but still, even in the tough struggle situation, Jesus is saying, when you're peacemakers, then you understand what the essence of being a son of God really is. And we have to appreciate that. Unfortunately, there are times in our lives when peace that exists between ourselves and others is disrupted. It's disrupted because of strife, because of contention, because of divisions, because of different ways of thinking about things that we have, that other people are different. When an estrangement between people takes place because of strife, many times there's this desire that people have to try to make peace, and that's a very noble desire. Certainly it is. For those who want to be sons of God, that's what they're about, making peace. Even though the desire for being a peacemaker exists in the hearts of very many people, quite often, sometimes they struggle with, I don't know how to do this. I haven't been down this road before. It's been a long time since I walked that path. How do I begin? How do I do this? If you do not know how to make peace between two parties that are estranged, you might find yourself in a situation where actually you're adding to the disruption of peace. Actually, you might be adding to the strife. It can become, as the proverb says in Proverbs 26 and verse 17, like one who takes a dog by the ears, which wouldn't be a pleasant situation for you. Like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. In other words, you better watch out or you'll get pulled into a dog fight. And it will end up not being very pleasant for you. Romans 14 and verse 19 says, so then we pursue the things which make for peace. We go after those. We chase those things that make for peace. We want to catch them. We want to hold them. We want to latch on to those. The things that make for peace and the things that make for building up one another, Paul tells the Romans in that passage. Maybe we need some encouragement to fulfill that admonition. Chase after those things. Pursue them. I suggest maybe in the lesson this morning a six-step approach that two estranged parties must go through for there truly to be peace between them. Number one, a desire for peace from both of the parties that have a disruption. Secondly, humility. Thirdly, meaningful communication. Number four, a willingness to face the truth. Number five, a willingness to change when one is wrong. And number six, a willingness to forgive. And I'd like for us to think carefully about each one of these in the lesson this morning. Now, if we're viewing this list as a list that we may pick the ones we like and reject the ones that we don't like, we will not be peacemakers, and hence we will not be the sons of God. We'll not realize what that truly is. Taking two or three of these steps is just not enough. All six of these steps must be taken for true peace, and that's why we want to think about them, each one, carefully in our lesson this morning. The first one is a desire for peace from both estranged parties. Psalm 120 and verse 7, I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. You see, in that depicted a situation where both parties are not interested in peace, so it's not going to work. Even though the peacemaker may want peace, unless both of the estranged parties want peace, you're really wasting your time trying to pursue that. And it's going to end in a bad way. And that's because the nature of peace, true peace, cannot be forced to exist between people. It has to be desired and it has to be pursued. Therefore, the peacemaker, one who would make peace between two that are estranged, that person must talk with both of the estranged parties separately and confirm that what they really want is to restore a peaceful relationship that existed between them. Behold, How good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. Psalm 133 in verse 1, a great passage, a wonderful passage, extolling the unity and the peace that exists among brothers. If peace is not initially desired by both of the people who are at odds with one another, that really doesn't mean that one should give up on his effort to create a desire for that unity and that peace to be restored with those. Instead, maybe he should work on trying to create the desire for peace in their hearts. And this can be done by helping them to understand how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity and in peace. Proverbs 16 and verse 28 says, "A perverse man spreads strife, and a slanderer separates intimate friends." What does that have to do with pursuing peace? Well, being a peacemaker quite often requires that you spend many hours laying the proper groundwork for preparing hearts that are estranged from one another to enjoy a peace and unity once again. Preparing this groundwork is done opposite the way that the gossiper, the whisperer, would carry out those details. A gossiper or a whisperer would wait for one of the estranged parties to say something negative about the other one. And then that person would run to the other one and say, "Well, here's what they said about you." And what's the response going to be? Usually, knowing human nature like you do, what would you expect the response to be? "Well, let me tell you what that person did, or what that person said, or something negative about the other person." And the gossiper and the whisperer will take that back to the other one. And you see what that does? That just promotes and flows over this bubbling up of strife and division and hatred even. And that's not the way to solve anything, is it? Carrying those bad reports back between them, that just further separates two that ought to be united and be at peace. The peacemaker, on the other hand, takes the two friends who are separated and tries to bring them back together. When talking to the estranged individuals, you look for something and you pursue something and you say something and you dig out something good about the other person and you talk about that. You bring that up. And you take the good things they say and the good feelings that they have back and forth between them. And when that happens, more than likely, if things are as they should be in their hearts, they'll think about that and they'll think, "You know, it's silly. It's so silly to be estranged from my friend or from my brother," whichever the situation may be. And maybe they'll realize, yes, the Lord was right. How good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Help create the desire in the hearts for peace. There has to be that desire. Many times I've known people who have literally cried their eyes out at night, every night, because they want peace, but the other one has no desire for peace whatsoever. And that's really a shame. Secondly, humility has to be there. Proverbs 13 and verse 10. "Through insolence comes nothing but strife, but wisdom is with those who receive counsel." The strange things about separations between people is that when you talk to both people, it's never anyone's fault. That happens so many times. Sometimes you see insolence, as described in the New American Standard Version of Proverbs 13:10, which is really a haughty attitude or insulting acts that one is still dishing out toward the other that he has parted company with. Or it seems that way from talking to people involved that it's never anyone's fault. Sometimes people will say, I didn't do anything wrong. It's their fault. It's the other one's fault. And so what you really have is a situation where if a young child were trying to paint a picture of two people at odds with each other, he might tag one as saying, I'm always right. And the other one is saying, I'm never wrong. And there you have it. You know, that lack of humility that will prevent the peace and the unity from existing. Because separations are accompanied with so much pain many times and so much anger, those involved get their feelings hurt and they become very defensive. And it's very difficult to encourage that person to be humble. This defensiveness blows into a situation where pride comes to the forefront. And it prevents many people from ever seeing the true nature and the true facts about how this division got started in the first place and how this disruption of our friendship came about, or how their actions affected those from whom they are separated. Something good to think about. How did my actions play out in this? How did what I said or what I did create a bad situation? That takes humility to think about that. Pride prevents many people from ever being willing to take those first steps toward peace. Philippians 2 and verse 3, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Two people at odds, who are unwilling to have peace between them and have allowed pride to fill their heart and defensiveness and anger, that person is not willing to push aside selfishness and conceit and not willing to be humble in mind regarding the other person as more important. Sometimes a peacemaker must really try to help these estranged parties take their eyes off themselves and their feelings and try to help them look from the perspective of the other side and see that the other person is hurting as well. If we can encourage and help those estranged to humble their hearts, then the rest of the process of peacemaking will be much easier and it will go much smoother and much faster. Humility, an essential part. Number three, meaningful communication. James wrote in James 1 in verse 19 and said this, "This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." Once a peacemaker who's striving to be a son of God in the strictest sense of the term has laid the foundation and the groundwork for desiring peace and having humility, then arrange a meeting together with the estranged parties. The next big step is taken by meaningful communication. Not just communication, but meaningful communication. Meaningful communication involves both estranged parties being, number one, swift to hear, number two, slow to speak, and number three, slow to become angry or slow to wrath. The role of the peacemaker in this step is simply to act as a referee, to make sure that both sides are truly communicating with each other in respect, and it can be done. If at any point in the discussion the peacemaker sees that meaningful communication has broken down, he can be a peaceful mediator to gently guide the discussion back to where it needs to be as a referee, not allowing things to get out of hand. Otherwise, before you know it, you can have a dog by the ears and be in a fight. Proverbs 18 and verse 13. He who gives an answer before he hears It is folly and shame to him. Great wisdom in that. One of the biggest problems people have in talking about things where emotions are involved is that we don't listen to others as carefully as we should to understand what they're saying and to see from their perspective. The first step in meaningful communication is learning to be swift to hear, even though you may have had your feelings hurt. Stop and listen to what the other person is saying. Open your ears and open your heart and hear what they say before you answer. Try to be as best as you can to understand what that person is saying. Ask for clarification if you don't understand. Ask them. See how they saw the situation. Try to understand how they truly feel. Proverbs 15, verse 28. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. It is so easy to fly off the handle and say something. It really is. It takes a strong measure of control to prevent that. But those who want to be righteous and those who want to be sons of God ponder how to answer. If you have heard what the other person has said and you think you fully understand, then take your time and learn how to be slow to speak. Being slow to speak means that you think about what you are going to say before you say it. You don't put the mouth in gear before you have the brain fully engaged. You think about what you want to say carefully. Think seriously about what they said to you. Then take the time. Take whatever time is necessary to make sure your response to them is exactly what you want to say. Proverbs 15 and verse 1 needs to be remembered. A gentle answer turns away wrath. You know how a lot of people survive criminal attacks, muggings in parking lots and things? A lot of people survive those by speaking with the criminal calmly in a soft voice and not deliberately provoking that person to anger. It's tried and tested in that situation, certainly. Can it be in other situations? A gentle answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up anger. How you say what you say is important, just as what you say is important. Because the separation involves so much emotional pain and so much anger, at this stage of peacemaking, you need to be extra careful not to allow these emotions to crowd out an efficient communication process, which they can. When people speak in anger, anger is heard louder than the words. A soft answer, a gentle answer, turns away wrath. That brings about meaningful communication. Harsh words will only make the fire bigger and more difficult to put out. Both the estranged parties must be slow to wrath, speaking with soft, controlled answers. When communication is meaningful, with respect, then those people who are at odds with each other can truly understand each other and hopefully put out those fires that separate them. Those hellish fires, those devilish fires that disrupt the peace and the unity that should exist. Meaningful communication, very important. Number four, we must be willing to face the truth. Proverbs 12 and verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. The fact that a separation has taken place between people tells you that someone, somewhere, has done something that is not right. Sometimes the fault is only one-sided and it's easy to see. But other times, both sides are at fault. And trying to determine what really happened as an outsider becomes almost impossible many times. But you as the peacemaker realize that. It's not the job of a peacemaker to become a private investigator to try to find out all the details about what really happened. One of the purposes of meaningful communication is to help those parties that are divided understand clearly how their actions made for a case of separation between them. Very often, if the first three steps of peacemaking are taken properly, after hearing the truth, those in the wrong are usually willing to acknowledge what they've done wrong, acknowledge the truth of their wrongdoing, and then you have taken a giant step toward peace. Sometimes, unfortunately, the one who has done wrong just refuses to face the facts and refuses to own up to his own responsibility and the result of his actions. In this case, there's really no hope for peace because that desire for peace is snuffed out. Those who have done wrong are right in their own eyes, and they want to go their way with this destruction and disruption of their relationship hanging on. You have to be willing to face the truth. And sometimes we have difficulty seeing the truth, and we need an objective perspective from a peacemaker who's striving to be a son of God to help us with that. Number five, a willingness to change where one is wrong is so vital to this process. He who conceals his transgressions will not prosper, Proverbs 28 and verse 13 says, but he who confesses them and forsakes them will find compassion. That's what sons of God are looking for, isn't it? Compassion with people and with God. If someone acknowledges where he's wrong but feels no remorse at all for his actions, obviously there will be no peace. It's not enough just to acknowledge where you are wrong. There must also be this humbling of yourself so that you can simply learn to say those words that your parents tried to get you to say a long time ago. I'm sorry. Would you please forgive me? You know, I've known people in my lifetime for quite a number of years who have said hurtful things to other people and done hurtful things to other people, who went all of those years and never one time could bring themselves to say, I'm sorry, would you please forgive me? It's also understood that whatever actions one may be doing that have caused a separation are not to continue. You don't keep doing the same things if you've gotten bad results, do you? They have to be stopped for the sake of peace. So you have to be willing to change where one is wrong. Now, what happened between grammar school and now that made you different? In grammar school, when the teacher tried to put a red mark on your paper because you didn't make that letter just exactly right, or you didn't use that word in the right way, or you got the wrong number on a math quiz, what did you do? Did you get angry at the teacher? Did you throw a fit? Did you lie down in the middle of the schoolroom floor and just spaz out right in the middle of everything? No, you didn't. You took what the teacher said and you corrected yourself and you learned from that. You were willing at one time in your life to change from the wrong. Now, what happened that made that different now? A very important step in the process. And then finally, number six, when we think about this a little bit, a willingness to forgive. You know, I like that picture with the eraser on it because I'd use that eraser a lot in grammar school. Matter of fact, I wore out several erasers, I'm sure. We have a big eraser that helps us, and that's Jesus Christ. God has a big eraser ready to erase the mistakes that we make on our paper so we can fix it, so it'll be right. We have to be willing. just as God is, just as Christ is, to forgive another person. Colossians 3 in verse 13 says it all. Bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. It's easier to take that step of forgiveness when we remember our Lord who died to forgive us. I love that song that Greg picked out, number 138. You know, that just says it all. We're having our bi-monthly singing tonight. I hope that we'll sing that song again after we think about these points about being a peacemaker. Forgiveness is the last but not the least important step for being a peacemaker. True forgiveness must take place in the hearts of those who have been wronged in any way. Otherwise, what causes separation, you know what it'll do. It'll just continue to ferment, to grow, to bubble up in the heart of the offended person, and one day it'll be brought up again. And one day it'll be broadcast to other people. Oh, the sorry way that sorry person treated me and what that person said. We have to forgive one another as Christ forgave us. And when Christ forgives us, our sin is removed as far as the east is from the west, and it's never brought up again. It takes a measure of strong faith for a Christian to operate that way, doesn't it? But we must. We must learn that to truly be sons of the living God. Only with that true forgiveness of heart can we remove separation that exists between us and someone else and truly be at peace with people that at one time we were estranged from. Be at peace with ourselves and be at peace with God. I hope that these 6 points, because of their practical nature, will be helpful to you when you find yourself in a position as a person striving to please God, that some peace has been disrupted between you and someone else. Does that ever really happen among God's people? Certainly it does. Jesus showed us that our lives are not so blissful and not a flower garden all of the time. Because we stand for a higher principle. We stand for the truth of the living God. And that in itself, that priority that we live under, is going to make a lot of people our enemies because we stand for God. Sometimes that disruption may come to be between us and someone else very close to us. And these are practical ways that we can be peacemakers and children of God. By our study today, I think that you can appreciate the great blessing that exists when there's peace and unity between people, and how precious that is, and how valuable it is, and how it's not in every case a natural occurrence that cannot be helped. It is something that we strive for, something that we work towards. You can appreciate the careful steps and the attitudes that are required to mend relationships when that peace is disrupted by the things that we've talked about this morning. There's a cost that has to be paid to overcome sin in our lives and the adversity that affects peaceful relationships. The devil's at work, and he's trying to destroy peace and unity among people. We have to realize that. We have to realize who's behind it. And he's an enemy of ours, and we must fight him. God desires men to seek peace with him and the forgiveness of their sins. And those who do are the sons of God. Now, what about you? Would you be a son of God today? Are you outside of Christ? Are you not walking in the ways of God? Can we help you walk closer to God when you leave this building than when you first came in? If we can, we'd love to. Will you be a peacemaker as a son of God? We hope that you'll be encouraged by this lesson to be that very thing. We can help you obey the gospel today, to have your sins washed away as a penitent believer in water baptism, immersed in water, raised to walk in newness of life. We'll be delighted to do so. And if we can, please come and let us know while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.